Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Daf Tzaditet. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Joe Alaham in honor of the rabbi. Today's daf also is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Hakam Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Le'ilu Nishmat Abraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. We are going to begin on Tzadichet Amud Bet, on the bottom line. Before we begin, I just want to go review one point that we said yesterday regarding the Berichim of the Mishkan. Those were the rods that went across through the Taba'ot that were on the north, south, and west sides of the Mishkan. The Gemara told us about the Bariya HaTichon. Bariya HaTichon was the middle rod, or the middle beam. That was the beam that went actually through the Kirashim. Which means you imagine that the Kirashim, let's say, had a hole through them in the center of them, and this Bariya went across the middle of them. And the Gemara said that this Bariya HaTichon was a nes, it was a miracle. In that, it went across, let's say, the northern side, it then turned to the western side, and then turned again to the southern side. So it was a miracle that the metal was able to turn itself in three directions. That's what the Gemara meant when it said benes. It was not referring to the rods that were in the taba'ot. The rods that were in the taba'ot, in the rings, they were just on each respective side. They didn't miraculously turn. It was the center rod, the Bariya HaTichon, that was in the middle of the beams that miraculously went around the all sides. I just want to point out that the bottom Tosfot says that our Gemara is at odds with the Braita of Melechet HaMishkan that says that the Bariya HaTichon did not go around three sides. The Braita of the Melechet HaMishkan says that there was a center beam on each side. Actually, the way that Braita learns is that each side had five beams. How? There was two rows of taba'ot on the top of the beam and on the bottom of the beam, and two beams went across each side. Meaning, let's say, from 1 to 10 amma, you had one beam, and then from 10 to 20, you had another beam on top. And on the bottom of the Kiddush, again, from 1 to 10, you had one beam, and then from 10 to 20, a second, that's four beams. And then you had the Bariya HaTichon, that went across all 20, just on one side. And therefore, together you had five beams on the long sides of the Mishkan. So that's arguing on our Gemara that says that the actual Bariya HaTichon wrapped around all the sides. That was the bottom Tosfot. Now we continue to discuss some of the construction of the Mishkan. Tanu Rabbanan, Harutzim Hayu Kirashim, V'Halulim Hayu Ha'adanim. Gemara tells us that the Kirashim, the beams, which we learned were 10 amot long, were chiseled out on the bottom, which means they chiseled the bottom out to make like two prongs that were coming out. Those prongs, which measured half an amma or half an amma each, because that was on the 1.5 amma side of the Kirashim. As we learned, the Kirashim were 1.5 amma by 1 amma, so this was on the long part of the Kiddush, which was 1.5 amma. So the Kirashim themselves were chiseled out on the bottom to make like two prongs that were coming out. They were 1 amma long, right? And they would fit into the adanim, and they were half an amma wide. Now, they were positioned in the middle of the Kiddush, where there was a quarter of an amma on each side of them. Again, so there was a quarter of amma of Kiddush, then you had the protrusion, the prong coming out, and then you had another protrusion, and they have a quarter of amma on the side, which altogether would give you 1.5 amma. Now the reason why they had to do that is so they could fit flush into the Aden that was on the bottom. So the Gemara says, "Tarunaban harutzim ayu kirashim, v'halulim ayu adanim." And the adanim were hollow in order they could fit perfectly. The Gemara continues and says, "V'nir'in kirasim." Actually, let's just read the Rashi together. Harutzim ayu kirashim. We can read that Rashi. It's 3 lines on the bottom. כמו שפירשתי, חצי אמה באמצע רוחבן מלמטה בגובה אמה, which means they were an אמה long, the prongs that came out of the קרשים, ונשארים הידות לכאן ולכאן, וגם הם חרוצים מבחוץ כשירעו בדופן העדן, meaning on the outer side of the קרש, there was a little space, which means they didn't put the prongs on the end of the kerish, they put them a little indented in order that when you stick it into the aden, it'll fit. Because the holes in the aden also were not at the edge. There was a little space, like a quarter of a ma, indented, so it'll fit flush into it. That's what Rashi is going out of his way to tell us. If you saw in your pirush hai, we can go back and see that inside, just so you get an understanding of what we're talking about. If you go to page 114, and you see picture 505, you see the Aden, right? You see it's 1 amma long, and you see the 2 holes, and it has a little indentation on the sides of it. You see picture 507, where you see the kedish and the prongs that are coming out of it. And you see that each one was half an amma, and there was also a half an amma in between. Comes the Gemara and continues. V'nir'in kerasin belula'ot kechochavim barakiyah. Now how did they tie the yiri'ot together? As we learned, the Mishkan had coverings. The first covering of the Mishkan was actually called Mishkan, and it was made up of 10 yiri'ot, 10 skins, and each skin measured 4 amot in width, and they needed to sew them together. But then, after they sewed them together, they sewed 5 of the yiri'ot to the other 5 to make one long piece. How did they do that? They used what's called kerasin and lula'ot. Lula'ot are like hooks, and the kerasin are the ties that, let's say, fit into the hook. Now the kerasim and nula'ot, when you looked at the top of the yiri'ot, it gave the impression as you're looking at stars in the sky. Why? So that she tells us, v'nir'in kerasim b'lula'ot tap rashi milta acharitihi. It's a new item it's telling us now. Shte mechabrot ayu ha'yiri'ot kol achat ve'achat hey yiri'ot tefurot zo imzu, which means the 5 yiri'ot were attached to 5 yiri'ot. Bemachat al pene kol orkan ube'emsa ya mechabet bekerasin mechaberet im mechaberet shayu lula'ot. You had loops that were bisfat chitzona on the rim of one of the yiri'ot shel kol mechaberet be'emsa mishkan elu keneged elu. So now you add these loops. Now the loops were made out of, let's say, a blue material, techelet, and you add the hooks that were made out of gold. So they put the loops into the hook. So now when you looked at it on top, it looked like a blue sky because it was made out of blue wool, and the gold hooks, they looked like shining stars. So the Gemara says, "V'nir'in kirasin b'lula'ot." So the loops that were in the or the hooks that were in the loops looked like kochavim barakia, looked like the stars that were in the sky. Tarur banan yiriot tahtonot, the bottom section of yiriot shel techelet veshel argaman veshel tolaat shani veshel shesh. So the bottom covering of the mishkan was made up of the following materials. Techelet is the blue. Argaman, that's the purple. Tola'at Shani is also a type of fabric. Veshil Shesh is like a silk. Ve'elyonot, and the top covering of the Mishkan, Shel Ma'aseh Izim, that was made out of the goat's hair. V'gedola Chochma Shneimra Be'Alyonot Yoter Mema Shneimra Be'Tachtonot. Greater was the expertise that was needed in making the top layer of the Mishkan covering more than was needed for the bottom covering. The ilu betachtonot ketiv, because by the bottom layer of the Mishkan, what does it say? V'chol isha chachmat lev, every lady that had chachmat lev wisdom, biyadea tavu, with her hands she spun the garments. The ilu be'alyonot, but when it came to the top covering, ketiv v'chol anashim asher nasa libam otana bechokma tavu et ha'izim. The pasuk here says asher nasa liban, which means their heart was elevated, implying that it took a higher level of expertise to do the top layer. Why? So the Gemara says v'tanya mishum rav nechamya shatuf ba'izim v'tavi min ha'izim, that the second layer that was made out of goat's hair was washed on the goat. When the hair was still attached to the goat, they actually washed the hair, and also they spun it while it was still attached, which took great wisdom. Normally, how do you spin it? You cut it first, then you spin it. Here they spun it on the animal itself. Why? As we learned earlier, because when it stays on the animal, it's able to become whitened. It's much more whiter and brighter than it is once you take it off. It loses its luster. So therefore, they wanted to make it, the best way possible, where it's very, very shiny. So therefore, they washed it on the animal and they actually spun it. Now, to do that takes great chokhmah. Therefore, the Gemara says the second covering of the Mishkan took more wisdom than the first covering. Comes the Gemara and continues. Shtei gezusraot. That was a quote from our Mishnah teaching us that if one transfers from a Rishut Yachid to a Rishut Yachid, over a Rishut Arabim on the same side, so then Mishnah says Hayav. Mm-hmm. Why? Because that's the way we saw in the Mishkan, the way they used to load up the Aganot. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Mishum Rabbi Hiya. Aganot Tahtehen Ubenehem Vitzidehem Rishut Rabim. As we learned in yesterday's daf, Rav told us that the wagons of the Mishkan, underneath them, in between them, and on the sides of them, had a status of Rishut Rabim. Now let's just review very quickly what we learned yesterday in the formation of the Agalot. We learned yesterday that the Agalot were 5 Amot long. The way we calculated that is that the space in the Agala itself was 2.5 Amma, plus the from the wall of the Agala to the end of its wheel on each side was 1.25 Amma. On each side, that's another 2.5. That brings it to 5 Amot. Now, there were 48 Kedashim, 20 on the north side, 20 on the south side, 6 on the west side, plus 2 mikutsaot, which were the corner pieces. There was 4 agalot, and the Merari family was in control of pulling the agalot. Now, there was 12 kedashim on each agala. As we discussed yesterday, the formation was what the Gemara said, be'atbe, which was a clip formation, which is they placed 2 kedashim flush against each other on one side of the agala, and 2 kedashim flush against each other on the other side of the agala. They placed them resting on the amma side, and therefore it took up 2 amot on one side of the agala, 2 amot on the other side. We explained as well that they placed them where the rings were facing opposite each other. Right? One Kiddush, the rings were facing out and the other were facing in order they could place them flush with each other. That took up 4 Amot, which left 1 Amma in between in the middle. 1 Amma is 60 Fahim, and therefore we said that area, the airspace, is considered Rishut Arabim. Right? And therefore they traveled in such a fashion. Now it should be pointed out that we also explained from Rashi, and we'll see in today's Gemara as well, that in between each agala, meaning there were two rows of agalot, there was an agala and right behind it another agala, and then next to it, to the left, let's say, there was an agala and then an agala behind it. The distance between the two agalot was also 5 amot, like the Gemara is going to teach us now. And the Gemara says, Amar Rab Mishum Rabbi Chaya, agalot tachtahenu benehem v'sidehem v'neshut rabim. Amar Rabbeye, ben agala la'agala, in between each agala, which means to the side of the agala, in between, kimlo orech agala, it had the distance of the size of an agala, which was 5 amot. Vekama orech agala, and the Gemara speaks of that. How much was the length of the agala? He amot. So now the Gemara asks the question: Lamali, what do you need 5 amot for the size of the agala? Bedalid upalga sage. 4.5 amma would have sufficed. Now let's figure out this question, why 4.5 amma would suffice. Well, if you're placing the kerashim in the clip formation as we learned, so if you place 2 on one side, 2 on the other side, so that takes up 4 amot. If you have 0.5 amma in the middle, 0.5 amma, which is 3 tefachim, so that really should suffice, because 3 tefachim, you do not say the law of lavud, and therefore it's not considered as if the pieces of wood are connected to each other. Therefore, it's considered a legitimate airspace, and therefore, when the rabbi said that in that space was considered a shut rabim, we understand because it was not mikorat, not considered roofed. So 4.5 should really be sufficient. Furthermore, Lashi says, ba'arba upalga sage, she'im misaderan al rochban, which means, if let's say you wanted to place them on the rochav side, let's say you wanted to place these planks, not on the amma side, let's say you wanted to place it on the amma and a half side. Okay? So Lashi says, she'im misaderan al rochban, right? In 5, if the agalot were 5, how many planes could you fit 1.5 across? Maximum you can fit is 3. Right? Because 1.5, 1.5, 1.5, that's 4.5. So therefore, if you chose to put them on the 1.5 side, if that option wanted to be open for you, as she says, technically all you would need as well is 4.5 amot. Now, and if you place them on the narrow side, which is the amas side, yoter midalid lo yisader. Now, you're not going to put more than 4. Why? Which means you have to also factor in that you had the tabaot. So therefore, even if you place it on the amas side, you cannot place more than 4 across. Ubepalga amana metzgile, which means if let's say you have you want to place it on the on the narrow side, so you can place 4 across, you'll have a 0.5 amma left over, right? And that could be the space that'll deal with the tabaot that are protruding. Which means that she's the understanding of Gemara's question is 4.5 amma works no matter what side you're going to put the kedashim. If you put the kedashim, as we learned, place them on the narrow side, so therefore you'll be able to put 4 across, let's say, and you'll still have some space for the tabaot. Right? Let's say you're not even putting them in the clip formation. If you're putting them just straight out, you still have enough to put 4, and you have 0.5 amma leverage. If you're putting them on their long side, so you'd put 3 over there, and you'd have, let's say, 4.5 amma. It would be a perfect fit according to that side. So comes the Gemara and says, why didn't they put 4.5? Ki echi delo lidcheku kerashim. Because if you're going to place them on the wide side, it's going to be very tight. And we didn't want the kerashim to squeeze each other to be tight. Therefore, we wanted to keep our options open, the Gemara is explaining. Really, you could have got away with 4.5 amma if you're placing it on the narrow side. But since there was some times that maybe for some reason they wanted to place the Kedashim on the wide side, so if they place it on the wide side, then 4.5 is very, very tight. So therefore they left 5 just so they have breathing room exactly if they want to put it on the 1.5 side. Again, if they put it on the 1.5 so they can fit 3, plus they can have a little half amma extra, as we said, for the taba'ot, and so on and so forth. So again, the Gemara's question was, why not make it 4.5? Gemara's answer, we made it 5 to keep the option of placing it on the wide side available. Amar Rava. Rava comes along and taught, Tside agala, the sides of the agala, that's from the wall of the agala to the wheel, kimlo rachav agala, that has the same distance as the width of the agala. Now the width of the agala we said was 2.5. Bekama rachav agala, shte amot u'mihsa. So we said the width of the agala, I mean the airspace, so wall to wall of the agala was 2.5. And the Gemara just told us now that the space between the wall and the wheel was equal to the width of the inside of the agala. Meaning, from the wall to the wheel was 1.25, from the wall to the wheel on the other side 1.25, which is 2.5, which is equal to the width of the agala. So the Gemara says, Lamali, what do you need such a wide agala? Be'amta upal gasagya. 1.5 width would suffice, meaning, so long as it's 5 long, I could also rest the kedashim on a narrower width. Why does it have to be 2.5 wide? For that matter, it could be 1.5 wide, and I could still place the 4 kedashim across in the same position, which is has the same 5 length. I'm just narrowing the base of it. Mm-hmm. Instead of 2.5 wide, make it 1.5. And then she goes even further to say, that she says, Lamali, I quote the Rashi, Lamali rahba tarta upalga. Im mifne she'im yitzarech loshiv mena kirashim letocha. Which means that she even gives you another option. And if it's because you wanted to, let's say, place the kirashim not on the actual agalot, but maybe you wanted to place the kirashim resting in the agala itself, which is, let's say you wanted to place them in the agala itself, he says no problem. If it's 1.5, they still can fit in the agala, because even the wide part is 1.5, so you can even place it lying in the agala itself. So therefore, that's why the Gemara chooses 1.5, because even if you wanted to place them in, it's wide enough to fit a kedesh in the agala itself on its wide side. And we always understood you're placing the kedashim above, on the walls of the agala, not in the agala itself. But now he's saying, for that matter, make it 1.5. And if you want, you can even place if you want to place them across, you can place them across. If you want to place them in, you can place them in. So the Gemara says, no, not an option. Why? Ki hechi delo lididu kedashim, which means to place them on such a narrow base, we're concerned that they might not be balanced enough and they might fall. Which means when you have 2.5 amma, it's a wide base, so now the kedashim are resting on 2.5, there's stability to it. However, when you place it on a 1.5, too narrow for a 10 amma kedesh to rest on it, and therefore we don't want the kedashim to topple over. So it's just a for balance purposes, we made it 2.5 amma. Comes Gemara and asks one more question. But we have a tradition that taught us what? Derech Reshut Arabim 16 amma. We know that the Reshut Arabim's width is 16 amot. Anan de gamninana mimishkan. And must be the source of that is where, from the Mishkan, meaning the Midbar, where the Jewish people camped, must have had that measurement of 16 amot. Now we know where the Agalot traveled, that was considered the Shut Rabim. Because we learned in the name of Rav, that under the Agala, and between the Agala, and on the side of the Agala, all that's considered Shut Rabim. Now let's measure the Agalot. The Gemara says, the Mishkan Hamisar Havai. If we look at the configuration of the way the Hagalot traveled, you had one Hagala, which is five Amot. We learned today that there was five Amma in between, and then you had another Hagala, which was five. That's 15 Amot. So you just learned that the Rishut Rabim is 15 Amot, but how do we know it's really 16 Amot? Where's the extra Amma? Well, the Gemara says, Amta Yitera Havai. There was an extra Amma there. Half Amma on each side. Why? The Avakae ben Levi. That the Levi would stand in that spot. If the Kedashim would fall, Havanakita, we would catch them. Which means, you had the 15, right? Now, the behind the Agala, they would add a little half an Amma space on both sides. Why? Because when the Hagalot traveled, there was a Levi that traveled right next to it, and he was in charge of making sure that none of the Kirashim fall into the airspace. So if he would see, let's say, one of the Kirashim falling, he would right away go under the Agala and get to the spot in order to straighten the Kirashim. Now the Levi needs a place to stand. So he has to, a little area, at least minimum area where he could stand, where he could maneuver. So therefore, there was an extra half a amma on each side in order to give the Levi standing space in order to straighten the Agalot. If you look at your Pirush eyes, you can see in picture 521, where you see how the Levi stands on the side of the Agala, and then he would go underneath the beams themselves, and he would stand in the airspace, you see. There's a little half a amma jutting on the outside of it, where he would stand there in order to fix the kedashim. So that half amma on both sides would be the extra amma. That's how they learn 16 amot. Comes the Mishnah and says, Chulyat abor ve'asela shehen gibuin asara. The Ruhban Arba'a, Hanoten Men, Hanoten Al Gaban, Hayav. Fahot Miken, Patur. Now, where the Mishnah goes back and teaches us some rules regarding a Rishut Yahid. We said an item to be considered a Rishut Yahid has to be at least 10 Tefahim high and 4 Tefahim wide. So now the Mishnah teaches us Chulyat Abor. Chulyat Abor literally means the sand that one takes out of a bor, which means he places, let's say, on the side of a bor. So let's say that sand mound is 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide. Or for that matter, ve'asela, a rock. You have a rock that is that measurement. It's 10 tefachim high, 4 tefachim wide. Hanoten al gab, hanotel mehen. If somebody takes from them and puts it in the Rishut Rabim, ve'anoten al gaban, or somebody that takes and places on them from the Rishut Rabim, hayav. Why? Because it's putting from the Rishut Rabim to the Rishut Yahid. The Gemara's Mishnah concludes, pachot mikan patur. But let's say it's either less than 10 tefahim or less than 4 tefahim wide. So what is going to be patur? Because it's not considered a Rishut Hayahid. So again, we learn from our Mishnah, seemingly a repetitive case. Whether it's the sand that you took out of the pit that has a 10 by 4 measurement, or the rock that you have that is 10 by 4, is considered a Rishut Hayahid. So the Gemara asks, Lama li limitni chulyat abor vasela? For what purpose does the Mishnah have to tell me the case of chulyat abor, the sand that comes out of the bor and a rock, litni abor vasela? Teach me better just bor and sela. Why? Because bor, I could learn a chidush that what? That you can have a Rishut Yahid that extends downward. Meaning a bor, which is 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide, also would be considered a Rishut Yahid. So tell me, bor, that would be a Reshut Ha'id downward, Ve'asela, and a rock, which is in Reshut Ha'id above the ground, 10 Tefachim and 4 wide, then you told me already two cases. But by telling me Chuliyat Tabor and Asela, you're basically telling me the same thing, but just the different materials. You're telling me, if the sand is 10 high and 4 wide, Reshut Ha'id. If the rock is 10 high and 4 wide, Reshut Ha'id. It's basically the same law. It's the same law on above ground Reshut Rabim, Reshut Yachid. We would have been better off if the Mishnah would have taken out the word Chulya. Forget about the sand that you're taking out of the board. Just tell me Habor Vasela. And then you'll already teach me the two different types of Reshut Yachid. The Reshut Yachid that extends downward and the Reshut Yachid that extends upward. Why give me two examples of the Reshut Ha'id that extend upwards, for example, the Chulya and the Sela? So that's the Gemara's question. Gemara, Lama li limit the Chulya Tabor v'Sela? What do you have to tell me? Two examples, Chulya Tabor and Sela, lit the Abor v'Sela. So the Gemara says, Misaya alel Rabbi Yohanan. This is a proof to what Rabbi Yohanan taught us. The Amar Rabbi Yohanan, Bor v'Chulyata mitstarfim la'asara. So he comes and tells the chidush that, let's say you have a board that's 5 tefachim deep, 4 tefachim wide, 5 tefachim deep, that's not yet the proper shi'ud. But you have the bank on the side of it, the chulya, the sand, you created a wall, let's say, from it, and the bank of sand on the side of it is 5 tefachim. So you're allowed to mitstaref, you're allowed to combine the bankment on the side of the board to make the board 10 tefachim by 4, and therefore it'll be considered a reshut hayachid. So there's a big chidush in the Mishnah. Chulya tabor means that the chulya is mitstaref to the board in order to make the board 10 tefachim, which is even though the board itself is only 5 tefachim deep. If you look in the picture, you can see on 527, right? You see a bor which has on the side of it a mound of dirt. From the top of the mound of dirt to the floor of the bor, it is 10 tefachim. What you're doing is you're being mitzaref, part bor and part chulya, in order to get to the measurement. Now, the Hadush is going to say that that board is going to be considered a reshut hayachid. Now, that's the way most of the Rishonim understand, that the board becomes a reshut hayachid, but not the chulya. The chulya itself does not have a status of reshut hayachid. That's the way Rashi understands, on the bottom Rashi, and that's the way the Tosfot understands that. Well, they were only discussing the status of the board. However, it should be pointed out that the Ran holds that the actual Chulya itself will now have a status of a Reshut Hayachid as well. Of course the board, but the Chulya as well. And his logic is, if it has the ability to make the board a Reshut Hayachid, La'atzmo lo kol shekin, for itself, all the more so, geez, this Chulya now made the board a Reshut Ha'id. So certainly itself will also have the status of a Reshut Ha'id. So by the board itself, or everybody agrees, it's now a Reshut Ha'id through the concept of Tziruf. However, when it comes to the Chulya that made the board a Reshut Ha'id, we have a Machlok in the Shorim. Nashi V'Tosfo told what? It's not a Reshut Ha'id. Whereas the Ran will say, it is. Comes the Gemara and says, Tanya Nameache. We have a Braita to support this. Bor Birshut Rabim. Let's say you have a board in the public domain. Amuka Asara Virachaba Arba'a. So it's a full-fledged Reshut Ha'id. It's 10 deep, 4 wide. En Mimale'in Emena B'Shabbat. One cannot draw water from it on Shabbat, because you're going to take the water from the private domain and bring it into the public domain. Ela imken asula mechitza gevoha yud tefachim. Unless, let's say you made a wall, or walls, let's say, around it that are 10 tefachim, so now you enclose that area and made it a reshut hayachid, so now you could draw water from a reshut hayachid to a reshut hayachid, because now it's considered an enclosed area. If there's no walls around the board, then already you're in the Reshut HaRabim, so you're taking from the Reshut HaHayit to the Reshut HaRabim, that's Asur. However, if you put walls up, so now you made the area of the board a Reshut HaYachid, therefore when you draw up to drink that water, it's going from a Reshut HaHayit to a Reshut HaHayit, which is okay. Nor can you put your, let's say, head in the well and drink from it on Shabbat. Well, let's say you don't intend to take the water out. Right. You want to go into the well itself. It's only permissible, the Gemara says, Elaim ke nichnista rosho verubo. You have to stick your head, the majority of your body, into the pit. We're concerned if you don't do that, gezerah, you might come to take the water out. And the Gemara continues, ubor vecholyata, and this is what we brought the Braita for, a bor and its cholya, meaning the pit and its embankment on the side, mitztarfin la'asara, you can combine them to get to the shiur of asara, of ten. So that proved, and that was the chidush of our Mishnah. The reason why it's said in our Mishnah, bor vecholyata, is to teach you the chidush that the cholya and the bor can mitztaref to get to the shiur of the shiur yachid. Comes Gemara and says, ba'amine rav Mordechai mirava. Rav Mordechai is the question to Rava. Amud b'reshut harabim. You have, let's say, an amud. You have a beam in the reshut harabim, in the public domain. Gevoha asara. It is 10 high. V'rachav dalet. And it's 4 wide. So that would constitute a reshut hayachid. Because it has the dimensions. Again, it's a beam that's standing in the reshut harabim. That has the 10 by 4 dimensions. So what'd you do? V'zarag v'nach al gabav. And a fellow went and he threw something and it landed on top of the amud. Now, what's the deen? What do you mean, what's the deen? He went from a reshut harabim and he threw something into a reshut hayachid. What's the question? So the Gemara says, no. Mi amrinan hare akira b'isur, hare anaha b'isur. One side is the obvious side. Well, you made a akira b'isur, you lifted the object in the reshut harabim. That's the akira. Was bi'isur, and the hanaha was also bi'isur because it landed in the reshut. Hayayir, it landed on top of the amud. That's one side. Odilma, or maybe kevan de mimakom patur ka'atya lo. Or maybe I can argue and say, listen, for this item to get on top of the amud that was 10, it had to rise above 10. Which means it has to go above 10 and then land down. So really, you picked it up in the Reshut HaYachid, but it went via what's called the Mekom Petur, right? Because it went above 10 and it landed back down on the Amud. So maybe if it goes through a Mekom Petur, you might say that that's the reason to say is Patur. Now let's just review the laws of the Mekom Petur so we can appreciate this question. A Reshut HaRabim goes up until 10 Tefachim. Once you go above 10 Tefachim, you're in a Mekom Petur. So then the question over here would be, which the Gemara is asking, since when you throw it, so it has to go above 10 in the Reshut HaRabim area before it lands on the Reshut HaRabim, so it went through a Mekom Petur. Now, the law is that a Reshut HaYachid goes up into the sky, Ad HaShamayim. So therefore, if you're going to learn like that, we have to say that the concern was that when you're throwing it into the Reshut HaRabim area, it's going to go above 10 into the Reshut HaRabim and then land on the Reshut HaYachid. Now, that is the way that she understands the sugya. The Ramban over here holds that really in this case, even over the Amud, we're going to say that above 10 is going to be considered a Mekom Petur. Aye, that goes against the rule of Reshut HaYachid Oleh Larakiya. So the Ramban understands that when do we say Reshut HaYachid Oleh Larakiya? That's only when you have Mechitzot. That's only when you have walls. Then you say it goes all the way up. However, here you don't have walls. You have an Amud. You have a beam in the Reshut HaRabim. So in such a Reshut HaYachid, above 10 is going to be considered a Mekom Petur. So therefore, no matter how you throw it, even if you threw it where it went above 10 over the Reshut HaYachid area, still it's coming from a Mekom Petur to a Reshut HaYachid. Now, Tosfot is bothered with a question over here, because it seems from earlier Gemariot that it's obvious that this case is Hayav, even though it went through a Mekom Petur. So why does the Gemara, Mordechai comes now and is asking a question that seemingly was already discussed in the earlier Perakim, and we solved it to say, it's Hayav. So Tosfot said, oh, but this is a special case over here. In this case over here, you have two different kohot. What does two different kohot mean? Your koach through the, let's say, object in an upward motion, right? Your koach ends once the object starts to fall down. Which means now when gravity takes over and the object starts to fall down, that's called koach koho. That's considered like his second koach. And the first koach, let's say, threw it up, right? So that brought it, let's say, to a mekom petur. Right? His koach brought it to high, then to the valley. What brought it down now? The second koach, which is like the gravity. So there's a sevara to say that it'll break up the akira to the hanaha, which is your akira is separate, because that was from koach, and now from the mekom petur to the reshuti yachid, that's coming from koach koho. That's coming from a second strength. And therefore, that's why in this specific case, where the direction is up and down, that's why the Gemara has a question, does the mekom petur create a situation where you're going to be patur? That was the Mordechai's question to Rava. Amar le, so Rava answered him. He told him, Matnitin, he told him, what do you want? It's a Mishnah. What's the Mishnah? He actually quoted our Mishnah. Why? Because our Mishnah said, if you have a rock, for example, that's 10 tefachim high, 4 tefachim wide, if you put something on it, you're going to be Hayav. Now the only way you can put something on a rock that's 10 tefachim high is if it goes above 10 first and then lands on the rock. So therefore, he was telling him that just like in our case, where our Mishnah, we have to go above 10 to put it on the rod. So it shows you what? I don't care if it went to a Mekom Petur, still you're going to be Hayav. So the Mordechai wasn't happy. Ata Shailel Rav Yosef. He went to ask the same question to Rav Yosef. Meaning, if let's say you throw an item on the Hamun and it goes above 10 tefachim and then it lands on it, Amarle Manitini. He told him the same answer. He said, it's a Bifirush Mishnah. The case of the rock. You went over the rock, 10 tefachim, you put it on your Hayav. He wasn't happy. Ata Shailel Abaye. He went and asked Abaye the same question. Amarle Manitini. He said, what do you want? It's a Mishnah. The same Mishnah. Amarle, oh. So Rabbi Mordechai told all the rabbis, Kullechu Beroka Dadade Tafitu. You're all spitting the same spit, which means you're all giving me the same answer. He wasn't happy. He didn't like the fact that they were resolving his dilemma from the Mishnah. He said, Kulichu beroka dadadi tafitu. You're all spitting the same spit. Amar le. So they told Rabbi Mordechai, Ve'at lo tispira. They told him, what? You don't hold like that? Well, you don't like our proof? Well, the Mishnah is not a good proof? Which it says in the Mishnah that somebody that places on the rock is Hayav. Now obviously you have to go above that divine. Why don't you like our proof? He says, Dilma Matnitin Bemachat. As I can explain, maybe the Mishnah is talking about a needle. Who said you're talking about a big object? Maybe you're talking about a very small needle that you're throwing the needle onto the rock. So the Gemara says, well, needle doesn't help anything. Mahat nameh, iefshad delo midliya purta. Which is, even the needle, if you're going to throw it, has to go above 10 before it lands on the top of the 10 tefachim rock. So tell me that you're talking about a small needle doesn't solve anything. So he says, no. Right, it starts to go above. So he says, no. De itle mursha. Now, I'll tell you that we're talking about the rock, let's say that it's 10 high, but it has a mursha, which is a little protrusion that is coming out of the rock, which is a little below 10. Now, that protrusion that's coming out of the rock is going to have a status of a reshuti yachid. And therefore, you could throw this little needle. It doesn't have to go above 10. It can land on this little protrusion that's coming out of the rock that still has the status of Ereshut Yahid. And that's why I could tell you, you're Hayav. If you look at the picture in 534, you see that little protrusion coming out of the beam that's in the Ereshut, that a beam. You see it over here? That's a little lip that's coming out of the side of it. And that Mursha is going to be considered Ereshut Hayahid. Exactly. It never went through Ereshut. I'm a competitor. So comes the Gemara and says, Iname, or I can tell you, if you look at your next picture, Diramya Baharitse. I can tell you that there was a little indentation in the rock. And therefore, when you threw the needle, it landed in that little hole. Now we have a law that says, Hure Reshut Yahid are like Reshut Yahid. The holes that come into the Reshut Yahid are like Reshut Yahid. So therefore, he figured out another way. You don't have to get on top of it. Could be this little indentation in the rock, and you threw the needle right in the, you know, the Tent of Achim area, and you're fine. So therefore, the Mordechai did not accept that Mishnah as a proof. Because you could learn the Mishnah in a way where you don't have to go from a Mekom Petur. You could either say it had a Morsha, it had an extension which was lower than Ten Tefachim, and you throw it on it, or you could say it had a Haritz, like an indentation inside of it, and therefore you threw it into the hole. Amar Rav Misha, Rav Misha said, Ba'e Rabbi Yohanan. Rabbi Yohanan had a question. Kotel Birshut Arabim. You have a wall in the Reshut Arabim. Gavoa Asara Ve'ena Rahab Arba'a. You have a wall. It's 10 high, but it's not 4 wide. So the wall itself cannot be at a Reshut Hayahid. Umukaf Le Karmelit. And it was surrounding a Karmelit. Karmelit, for example, would be like a Bika'a. A valley. A valley is a Karmelit, it's a rabbinical domain. And then you finish the wall, and now you surrounded the Karmelit. Now, once you surround the Karmelit with walls, that Karmelit now becomes a Reshut Yahid. Vezarak venach al gabav. And now you threw something and it landed on the wall. Mi amrinan, do we say, Kivan de enorachav dalid, since bottom line the wall itself does not have a width of 4, makom peturu is going to be considered a makom petur. Odilma, kivan da asa ore shuta yahid, kivan de male damya. Or do I say like this? Since now this wall that's not 4 wide, but it's surrounding a karmelit, bottom line the karmelit becomes a reshut yahid now, because it has walls. Now, I'll consider, imagine as if that the entire karmelit from the floor all the way to the top of the wall, let's say, is filled up. And therefore now you have not a less than 4 tefachim surface, but you have a very, very wide surface. Because we'll consider the entire surface of the top, let's say, as if it is filled in. Because since it's making it an Reshut Yahid, so maybe I'll consider what? That it's Maleh. Imagine that from the ground of the Karmelit, all the way up, it's filled with dirt. So now, you definitely have a 4x4 Tefachim width. So that's the Gemara's question. Do you follow the wall strictly? If you're following the wall strictly, it's still not a Reshut Yahid. It's got the 10, but it doesn't have the 4 width. True, it can make what's beyond it a Reshut Yahid, because bottom line, there's walls around it. But does the wall itself become a Reshut Yahid? So one side is no, the wall itself doesn't have the measurements. Another side says no. Since it's surrounding the Karmelit, I'll consider that the Karmelit now is filled all the way to the top. Now you have a very large surface, therefore it gives you the width, therefore you should be Hayav. Amar Ula, so Ula said, Kalvahomer. He's going to make a simple Kalvahomer. La'chirim oseh meritzah. La'atzmo. Lo kol shekin. Which is, you're telling me, this wall over here has the ability to make others a Reshut Yahid. For itself? Lo kol shekin. So he's learning over here, simply to say, if it has the ability to make something else a Reshut Yahid, like in this case the Karmelit, certainly itself will be considered a Reshut Yahid. Now the Tosfot over here speaks out, in the Dibur HaMatil Umukaf, the Karmelit, Vaasor Reshut Yachid, Omer Ri, Temashma De Davka Mukaf Le Karmelit, Tekevan De Mukaf Le Karmelit, En Kol Kach Severa Sheyaaseh Reshut Yachid, Mitav De LaAcharim Oseh Mechitza, Aval Mukefet Reshut Rabim Vaasor Reshut Yachid, Peshita, which means the Gemara did not discuss if, let's say, these walls were around the Reshut Rabim. Because for sure, if it made the Reshut Rabim a Reshut Yachid, certainly itself it'll be a Reshut Yachid. That's why the Gemara chose a Karmeli, which is less obvious. Which is, if a Reshut Yachid was able to be converted into a Reshut Yachid by the fact that these walls were around it, certainly the wall itself is going to have the status of a Reshut Yachid. That's a major thing. You can convert a Reshut into a Reshut Yachid with these walls. Kavahomer itself. The Gemara only had its question by a Karmeli. Now the Rishonim point out on this point, the Rashba says this, that we're only talking about a case where the walls originally themselves were not surrounding the entire Karmelit. Let's say you had a Karmelit, a field, let's say, an open field, right? And you had, let's say, just two walls around it. So those walls were not making the Karmelit a Reshut Yachid. Then you came along and you added, let's say, two more walls. So there's the question of the Gemara. On such a case where the original walls really were not making it a Reshut Yachid, and then by adding the extra walls, the original walls now became de facto Reshut Yachid walls, then we had a question. But says the Rashba, if you put four walls up like a Tahila, to surround the Karmelit where they were built originally to make it a Reshut Yachid, then the Gemara has a question. Then Pashut, all the walls are going to have the status of the Reshut Yachid, even if they don't have the width. The question of the Gemara is only where you added more walls after, and then de facto the other walls became Mukaf to a Reshut Yachid. Then the Gemara wants to, since they were constructed, they were in the Reshut Yachid, and now by the fact that they turned into surrounding Reshut Yachid, there the Gemara is questioning what status will they have. But if they were built originally surrounding the Karmelit where they were built with the intent and the fact that they made it a Reshut Yachid, for sure, for others they made it a Reshut Yachid, because they can for themselves. And that's why the Gemara is very wordy in this case over here. If you look at the Gemara's Lashon, it was Ba'erab Yohanan, Kotel Beshut Rabim Gavoy Venera Havarba, Umukaf Le Karmelit, Va'asa'o Reshut Yachid. Which means, it's telling you with different stages over here. You had a wall, and it was surrounding a Karmelit, but not in totality. And then you made it a Reshut Yachid. So therefore it's telling that only in such a case where it started off as not making the Karmelit Reshut Yachid, and then just by adding, that's why Rashba speaks out. Itman Nameh, we have an Amoraic statement to support this. Amar Rav Chiya ben Asher, Amar Rav, Vechen Amar Rav Yitzhak, Amar Rav Yohanan, Kotel Bereshut Rabim, Kavoa Asara, Ve'en Rahav Arbaa, Umukaf LeKarmelit. And again, it's surrounding the Karmelit. It makes the Karmelit Reshut Yachid. If somebody that throws on the wall itself, even though it's not four wide, you're going to be Hayab. Why? For others, you can make a Mechitza. For itself, all the more so. So we see an Amoraic statement that supports what we just said. Comes to give it up further by Rabbi Yochanan. Bor Tisha. Now let's say you have a bor that is 9 tefachim deep. Ve'akar mimena chulya. And now you dug out of it some dirt. Now let's analyze what happens when you dig out of it some dirt. When you dig dirt out of it, you now turn the bor into a bor of asara. The only question is, at the time that you dug it out, it was only 9. It was not considered a Reshut Yachid. So the question of the Gemara is, Vishlima la Hasara, now it, when you dug out the dirt, it became Hasara. Mau. Akirat Hefetz Vasiyat Mechisa Bahadeh Hadadeh Kateh Mechayev. Do you say that by taking out the item, making the Akira on the dirt, and simultaneously that created the Mechisa, meaning of 10, and therefore you should be Hayah, because it's going to be considered as if you were Oker from the Reshut Hayahid, and therefore when you put it in the Reshut Rabim, you're going to be Hayab. Because again, simultaneously with the Akira, now created a tent. Right? Because you dug one more. And therefore, since you dug one more, the Akira is considered Akira from A, the Shut HaYachid, which was created simultaneously at the time of the Akira. And then when you put it in the Shut HaRabim, you'll be Hayav. Or I'll tell you no. Maybe you have to have already 10 tefachim there. You have to be okir from 10. Not when you're making it simultaneously with the Akira. That's the Gemara's dilemma. Now obviously the discussion that Dan points out over here, you're not going to be hayaf for digging. Let's say we're talking about where the earth is soft already, where it's considered dug up already, you're just moving the dirt. Because otherwise, what's the she'elah? We're not there, you're going to be hayaf on hofer. So he says where the dirt is, let's say, it's uprooted already, you're just lifting it up. In any event, the Gemara answers this question by saying like this, V'im timse lomar, kevan delo ave mechitza asara meikara, lo mechayev. Which means, if you want to answer me the question and tell me, listen, bottom line, since at the time that you made the Akira, you didn't have ten deep, and you want to tell me that you're not going to be Hayav, let's entertain that side of the Sefik, and say that you're going to be Patur in such a case. What about this question? The Gemara goes the other way. What's the quick case? Bor Asara. If you have, let's say, a bor that is 10, Benatan letocha chulya, and this time you placed in it a chulya, some dirt, umi'ata, and now you caused it to become 9, which means by filling it in now you made it 9. Mau hanachat chefetz v'siluk mi'itza ba'de adadikatu mechayev, which means now that already when you place the chefetz into the bor. Right? When you placed it in. So we'll say that since it happened simultaneously, so it's considered as if you placed it on Asara. And therefore you're going to be Hayav or Lo Mechayev. Or maybe I'll tell you, no, the bottom line is considered as if it landed on something that is less than that. So the Gemara over here had back-to-back questions. The first question was where the Akira
made it then.
Made it 10, and here was the Hanaha made it less than 10. Now, obviously the Gemara, for some reason, understood there's more Sevara to be Mekel by Akira than Hanaha. Because when it came to the Akira, the Gemara says, well, Pashut, Akira is a very important item in the Hotza'ah process, and the Tosafot speaks this out early in the Masechet as well, that by Akira, that is the ikar of the Hotza'ah, therefore we're more strict, let's say, in its laws, and therefore we can entertain to say, since when you made the Akira it wasn't from 10, so therefore I could say Patur. But maybe by Hanaha, I could say what? That the Hanaha case, when you had a board of 10, and you threw it in over there, maybe in that case you're going to be Hayav. Maybe Akira is more stricter dinim over here. To be considered a full-fledged Akira, it's got to be from a Makom Hashuv already. And not when it's happening simultaneously. So again, the Gemara's first question was, you had a board of Tisha'ah. You made the Akira, made it a board of Asara. So therefore we'll say what? We'll say since it happened simultaneously, so or we'll say what? Since you made the Akira, at the time that you made the Akira, it wasn't a board of Asara, we'll say Patur. But what about when you made a Hanaha? Do you say that'll be Hayav in such a case? So comes the Gemara and says, Tifshot Lehemidide. What do you mean? We can bring a proof from a Mishnah. Which means this case already was discussed. Right, where was it discussed? Etnan. Hazorek arba amot bakotev. A person that say threw 4 amot in the Shut HaRabim and the item landed on a wall. Demala mahasarat tefachayim kezorek ba'avir. If it landed above 10 tefachayim of the wall, so it's considered like throwing in a mekom petur, because we know the airspace above 10 tefachayim of the Shut HaRabim is considered mekom petur. Lemata me'asaraf, it landed on the wall less than asarat tefachayim, kezorek ba'aretz. It's like you threw it on the ground. And what's the thing? Zorek ba'aretz arba amot. If a person throws 4 amot on the ground of the Shut HaRabim, hayav. Now, we continue to analyze the case. Ba'adinam ba'a, we analyze. Ve'halonach. What are you talking about? When you throw something against the wall, it doesn't rest on the wall. It bounces off the wall. So what we don't even understand the case. How can you throw something against the wall and it's going to land on the wall? When you hit it off the wall, it bounces off the wall and falls down. So the Gemara says, no. No, we're talking about a sticky item. For example, so you have a fat fig. Alright, so it's sticky. So you threw it against the wall, now it sticks against the wall. So now we have the case. You threw a sticky fig for a mod and it landed on the wall. Bottom line, if you measure from the end of the fig to where you threw it, it's less than 4 amot. Because the fig itself takes up some space. Mm-hmm. So therefore it's really not 4 amot. If you're throwing precisely 4 amot mitzum samot, an exact 4 amot, it's really not 4 amot because the fig itself does take away from the space. So that would be analogous to the case where you threw something into the pit, and at the same time that you threw it into the pit, it minimized the shiur. So it says, so therefore, learn from the case of the fig to the case we just asked. And just like in the case of the fig, we said, Yahayav, right? Because bottom line, it landed, and I don't care if, let's say, it minimized, I'll say, consider minimizing it after. So therefore, say the same thing by the board. You had a board of asara. When you threw it in, I'll consider it as if it landed on asara, and then it minimized it. Even though right now it doesn't have the shoot, so what? By the case of the fig also doesn't have the shoot up at Ba'amot. So that can solve our dilemma. So the Gemara says, no, no proof. Hatam lo mevatele. Hacha mevatele. Jane, there's a big difference. The case of the fig, you don't leave it on a wall. Right? Nobody leaves a fig. No, you don't leave it there. It's not made to stay there. So therefore, since it's not made to stay there, we're not going to consider it that it has the ability to take away from the four amot space. However, when you put dirt into a bor, the dirt belongs in the bor. You're leaving it there. Therefore, that has the ability to what? To minimize from the shi'ur. And therefore, just because you said you're hayav in the case of the devela does not mean you're going to be hayav in the case of the dirt in the board. The dirt in the board belongs there. You're mevatel it there. You're going to nullify it there, so to speak. Therefore, it's considered to take away from the shiur. And bottom line, it did not land now on a shiur of asara. Therefore, there's a simarat to say patur. Now, that question remains in abeyance. That question remains in abeyance, which is even if you want to say, when you make an akira, you want to say you could be patur. Because bottom line, maybe I can say you weren't okir from a makom hashuv. But when you were maniach, maybe I can say that since at the time of the hanacha, bottom line, now it made it. At the time of the hanacha, I'd say bottom line, it was 10 when you were maniach, and then it became less. Maybe I can say you'd be hayav. So the Gemara says, well, I'll bring you a proof. In the case of devela, no proof. The case of the vilaya hayav, even though it minimizes the shiur, because that's not considered something that belongs on the wall, and therefore it doesn't consider avedin of being mevatel the shiur. But here, it's definitely mevatel the shiur, because what? You mevatel the chulya in the bor. Now, on this piece of Gemara, there is a very interesting tzfat emet. Tzfat emet asks the question like this. He says, what are you talking about? When you're throwing something into the bor, forget about when it lands. Once it gets within 3 tefachim of the bor, you have lavud. So once you say the din of lavud, so therefore it's considered as if it landed, and if it landed, it still landed in a place of 10 deep, and then when it lands, it's mimaret. So if you use lavud, you'll be hayav without a question. Who wants to give a shayla? So the Sfat Emet says a very, very important sevara in the way lavud works. He says, lavud cannot be better than if it landed itself. Which means if it landed itself, we have a sefik. So lavud cannot be more mahmir than if it landed, we're not certain if you're going to be hayav or not. So lavud is not going to be stricter than actually if it touched the ground. If it touched the ground, we have a safek. We don't know. Do we say it happened at the same time? Or do we say, no, it's considered landing first? And then, so if it landed, you don't know. So what are you going to say now? Lavud is going to be stricter in a halachic landing? Therefore, he says, the Gemara did not entertain the side of Lavud. Comes the Gemara further and says one more question. Rava had a question. What was his question? Zarak daf. A person threw, let's say, a daf. That would be, let's say, a board. Venah al gabe yetedot. And it landed on yetedot. Let's say you had poles. Okay? Let's say practically the poles were 9 tefahim. By throwing the board, it made the poles now 10 tefahim. So therefore it legally made it a reshut hayachid. So now the Chaurah, it's the same question. You made the reshut hayachid simultaneously by throwing the board. They wonder, are you going to be hayav for throwing the board? Let's say you threw it from the reshut harabim. Okay? So now the Gemara asks the question. Gemara says, Mau. The Gemara says, what's your question? Hanachat chefetz va'asiyat mechitza ba'adei adadikatu. If you're asking the question of that you made the walls and you were maniach simultaneously. Right? That's really the question. Bottom line, it's the same question that we asked. Hainu de Rabbi Yochanan. Which is, you're asking the same question. What's the difference between throwing some sand into a pit that's 10? Or throwing a daf into a pit that's in this case over 9, where you're making it asara. So therefore, it's the chaura, it's the similar she'ela. That's the question of Rabbi Yohanan. Again, we just had questions from Rabbi Yohanan. What was his second question? His second question was that when you, let's say, have a board that is asara. Okay, you have a board that was asara. Or you have a board that was asara, let's say. And then you, let's say, threw something in it. So therefore now we said you minimized it and you made it 9. Or do we say since at the time, bottom line, when it landed, you could be considered on 10, then it's considered a landing. So that was the whole shilat. That was simultaneously or not. So you're asking a similar question now. You have 4 poles. Which is 9, let's say. And you threw the object over it, the daf over it. Now it lands on it. Now it makes it a reshut hayachid. But at the time that it landed, it didn't have it. So the question is, it's a similar shayla. So comes again, look at just the sheet for a second. Agabe yitidot dakot. Shayu givot yud ve'en nachavot dalet. So the sheet is turned to the other side. Let's say you can even say they were 10 high, but they just weren't 4 wide. And by placing the daf on top, it's going to give you the width. You can learn it either way. Either the daf is giving you the height, or the daf is giving you the width. Bottom line, the daf is going to make it a reshut hayachid. That is the question. So the Gemara says, ki kamebaya lelirava. So now you know what Rava's question was? Kegon de zarag daf vehefetz al gabav. Let's say you threw the daf, and you had an object on it. There was something on the daf. My keban the bahad adadi kaatu kanachat chefetz v'asiyat mechitzadame, which means now we have to deal with two things. Yeah, bottom line, the daf landed, but now you have a little object on top of it. So do we say since bottom line it happened simultaneously, and therefore bottom line will be patur because it didn't land in a reshut hayachid? Or do we say, O Dilma, Kevan de lo efshad de lo midliya purta, when the daf land, it's impossible that the object does not jump up a little, right? Because when it lands, it pops up a little, the object, then it lands again. V'adar nayich, kasiyat mechisa v'anachat hevetz dami. So now it's considered you made the mechisa first, now it's a reshut hayachid, the item jumps up a little and falls down, and therefore will be considered what? Hayav. So therefore the Gemara's question, by the case of the Mechitza itself, the daf itself, that's a question. That already, that L'chaura should be resolved the way we learned before. Let's understand how we resolved the question before. When you have the Chefetz itself, which is you have, it was nine, let's say, right? It was not a Rishut Yachid. It was less than four. It was not a Rishut Yachid. Right? Less than ten. And now you throw the object in. So therefore, we're telling you what now? You made a Hanacha, but at the same time, you made a Rishut Yachid. So the Gemara says, well, that was the question that Rabbi Yochanan had. So whatever you're going to say over there, you'll say over here. What nuance did you add to the Sheila? He says, no, I'm adding the case of, we had a Hefetz on the item, which is, if you have a Hefetz on the Daf, then maybe already is a more similar to say Hayaf. Why? Because when the Hefetz lands, when the Daf lands, the Hefetz jumps up for a second and then lands. So therefore the Mechitzah was made, which means you have a full-fledged reshut hayahid, and then you have the efforts landing on reshut. So therefore there's a sevarat to say there you'll be hayaf. Or do you say the efforts follows the daf, and therefore, since bottom line, at the time that the daf landed, it was 9, it wasn't 10, therefore you're going to be patur. Now it should be pointed out that the question could be asked on this case as well, that even if you want to say the Hefes jumps up, bottom line, it's not jumping up more than 3 tefachim. And therefore it's considered lavu, therefore it's not considered a legitimate hanaha. Because bottom line, it's got to come from within 3. So the logic of that side will explain is, you're right, the Hefes itself did not jump up more than 3. But if you're going to say Hayav on that side, that means we'll follow the Hanaha of the Daf. Since the Daf was more than, came in for more than 3, so if that's considered, from the Hanaha of the Daf, will Mechayev the Chefetz that made a smaller Hanaha. Because in itself, you did not make a Hanaha technically, because it just jumped to less than 3 to Bahrain. That's considered as if it was there from the beginning. So you have to combine on that side of the question, the Hanaha of the Daf, that would be considered the legitimate hanahat to mechayev the hanahat kolshu of the Hefetz itself. Now, before we conclude today's daf, I must go back and say over a very important question that she had on the Amud Rishon. On the Amud Rishon, we had a question of the configuration of the agalot that we said were 15 amot wide. Agalah 5, in between 5, and the Agalah itself, 5. So the Gemara said, what do you mean? We know that the Shut Rabim is 16 Amot. So that she asked the question, she says, what are you talking about? Forget about the Agalot. We know that the Agalot were carrying Kirashim. And we know the Kirashim spanned the entire Agalot plus, because the Kirashim were 10 Amot. So therefore, if the Kirashim are 10 Amot, you have at least 20 Amot of the Shut Rabim over there. So they were carrying them in the Shut Rabim. And that's the size of the Kirashim. So that she says, what's the Gemara's question? Forget about the Agalot. Why didn't you deal with the Kirashim? So that she answers very simply, because the Kirashim were above 10 Tefahim. And therefore, above 10 Tefahim in the Shut Rabim is considered a Mekom Petur. And therefore, could not learn from the fact that the Kirashim had a width of 20. Had to learn from the Agalot themselves, or beneath them, which is actually the domain of the Rishutim. Again, the Kedashim, although they had the width of 20 plus, that she says it was even more than 20, because you have to actually separate them a little so they don't cling together in between the Agalot, because they were actually flush, and therefore they had to move them a little, so it was like 20 plus, but still doesn't matter. Since they were above Asarat Tefachim, you cannot learn from the Kirashim, you have to learn from actually the Agalot and the Hef Amma on each side of the Vim. Baruch Adonai Le'olam.
Amen. Amen.